It's the Boomer and Geo podcast from WFAN.
Hi, Boomer and Geo, coming to you live for the Built for Tough studio on the Fan and CBS Sports Network. What's going out? What's going on out in California is just devastating. The images are apocalyptic looking. There's been so many people. Of course, there's been deaths now. There have been hundreds of thousands that have been displaced. There's been homes that have burnt down. There's entire parts of towns that have been burnt down. And some of the images here on you see on CBS Sports Network look like a movie. It does not look like real life. And it has been devastating. It's actually, quite honestly, it's been tough to look at because you just think about this devastation. It's overwhelming and it's not stopping. And with the winds and obviously how wildfires spread, there's still a long way to go and the water issues that they have out there. And there's a lot to talk about with that we won't get into now. Obviously, you hope for the best and hope that this thing gets under control. But as far as the NFL is concerned, they may have to move the Monday night game, and they have a contingency plan now because that's out in L.A., Vikings-Rams, and they would play in Arizona. I wouldn't be surprised if you heard that call made in the next 24 hours.
Yeah, I don't think the resources are there to support an NFL football game. I really don't. And this is real-life stuff. I mean, I was captivated by it yesterday. I have friends who are captivated by it. They can't believe it. We've all been to that area. It's a gorgeous, gorgeous area. And, I mean, it is just amazing how these neighborhoods have been just completely, decimated. And one of the stories that is coming out of it, and it's a serious story for all of us around here as well, and that is, like, a lot of these people don't have home insurance anymore because they can't get it.
Yep, yep.
And people want to blame the insurance companies, and I understand why. I understand. It's either pharmaceutical or insurance companies. But they are built to make money like every other company in this country. And I had a friend that was a high-level executive for a major insurance company in this country. And I remember him telling me back in around 2008, 2009, I believe it was, that and this is a caution for all of us around here, that they were pulling out of homeowners insurance on Long Island. And the reason for that is because much like football teams, much like baseball teams, they have analytic teams that look at weather patterns, look at potential disaster patterns, and they know that if they are stuck, if they are in doing business in one of these areas, that, you know, they're going to lose a lot of money and they're going to go out of business or they're not going to be able to afford, you know, fulfilling all the claims. And, you know, we've all been through this. You know, I've had floods in my house. I've said, you know, this is what this costs, that's what that costs. And you fight back and forth with the adjuster. So I know the frustrations of it. We all know it. But what happened here in California is because of certain policies that were put in place by the state, it impacted the decision-making by the insurance companies to pull out. And they said, if you're not going to rectify what we know is to be a problem and could be a problem, then guess what? We are pulling out of your state and we are not going to be able to insure these homes. And a lot of these people that have lost their homes, and this is a cautionary tale, that this is how government policies impact all of us. And it could be at the state level. It could be at the local county level. Could be at the local village level. Or it could be at the federal level as well. Like, everybody thinks now, like what happened in Maui. Same thing. You have that in Maui. You have what happened in North Carolina, that FEMA is going to come in and just fix everything, that we're not going to spend the money that we should be spending to prevent things like this if we can. So this is why incompetency rears its ugly head in situations like this when all people are affected, all people, every single one, and your heart breaks for them.
So, yes, absolutely, and I echo that 100%. So you believe that the right thing to do is to make that call on that Monday night game now and get it out of
there. 100%. Yeah, I mean, 100%. They can't. I mean, like, there's just, you see it. I mean, it's devastating.
Yeah, and I don't know the geography well enough of where SoFi Stadium is.
It's right there.
There's got to be smoke.
Yeah, 100%. Yeah, 100%. Right. And you have to understand, it's got to be all hands on deck when it comes to emergency personnel, whether it be firemen, policemen, National Guardsmen, whatever it is. You have to have all those hands focusing on different aspects now of what is going to happen to these communities. So we've seen, like, I saw like 10 banks burned to the ground.
Yeah. Yeah.
So what's in the basement of the bank?
Well, I mean, money.
Exactly. So now you have to have security for that. You have to have security for looting. You have to have security. You know, and I saw one of the shirts, I think it was from Pasadena. He says, you know, if you loot, we're going to catch you. How about if you loot, we're going to shoot you?
Yeah, you know what? If I'm just picturing like Monday Night Football and the game happening in L.A. and then they're showing like the smoke in the background.
You can't secure the stadium.
And I don't think they're going to get it under control by Monday.
Even if they did, you can't secure the stadium because you are stretched so thin. You know what I mean? Unless you bring in some sort of National Guard outside of your state that would be able to support a football game. And it seems really trivial to actually have a football game under the circumstances when all of those emergency personnels, you know, need to be there and need to be supporting the communities that they live in. And it's unfortunate that the game has to be moved. But I will say this, the NFL, obviously, as it always does, has an unbelievable platform to get people to support this particular situation.
And they'll do that with this, too.
Yeah, they will. And they will. And they'll be.
I know the Chargers have donated money already. I'm sure the Rams have as well. So, yes, they will get the word out. They'll do everything they can to help. But this is one of those situations where it's...
Here's the other thing that I would just say about all this money that's being donated. And believe you me, I've participated in it. I raise money for our own foundation, and I use it wisely and try to make the biggest impact I can. So the New Orleans terrorist attack and the families that were killed, there's been fundraisers for that. And I'm like, I just want to know, is the money going to where it should go to? It needs to go to each individual family.
Sure.
That's why we would be donating money. Like if I watch, you know, Fox News and they're asking for money and they're saying they're going to help the victims. Okay. I hope that those families are receiving funds.
Yeah, directly to them. Yeah.
Directly to them. And hopefully it's tax free.
Sure. Yeah. You would hope. And that would be the right thing.
I mean,
that's
why I would give money and have. That's the only reason why, knowing where that money is going and making sure that I know the Red Cross is a big part of this. I know that the NFL has a nice partnership with the Red Cross and they do help and they do make a difference. But just, you know, if you are like somebody whose house just burned down and your whole neighborhood is gone, are you going to rebuild there?
No. Yeah, I mean, no. Especially if you're making that decision in the next week or so. I mean, absolutely
and
not.
And this is their Hurricane Sandy.
Yeah.
Like what Hurricane Sandy did to us and did to our communities. That's what this is.
Yeah. And it is just, like I said, it's just chilling to look at the pictures. All right.
So one more thing I'm going to say. And this is why you have to have competent people in powerful places to make the right decisions at the right time and prepare for the worst, as opposed to everything else that they may be doing when they should be securing the public safety, which is the most important thing that any politician can do.
All right, so we'll keep an eye on if they move the game on Monday Night Football or not. Feels like that should be the right thing to do. All right, I'm going to bring you back to the first real interaction that you and I had away from the radio station, when you were nice enough to bring me out to Lambeau Field on Monday Night Football when I was producing Joe and Evan. I was wearing a Steve Hutchinson jersey, and you were doing Monday Night Football on Westwood One. You walked into Chernoff's office when I was sitting there with Joe, Evan, Chernoff, and Spitz, and you asked me to go to the game, and it was a hilarious story, and Chernoff said, no, he can't, he's got to produce the show. And then Joe goes, bro, you got to let him go, it's a once in a lifetime. So go out there, and one of the stories I always tell is that I'm standing on the field with you and Ron Jaworski.
Yes.
And we're talking quarterbacks, and Jaworski's slamming a couple of guys, and it was very, very funny. So the reason why I bring this up is Ron Jaworski slamming another quarterback.
Uh-oh.
Now, not as bad as he slammed Vince Young and Matt Leinart to me and you, because he called them names I can't even say on the radio.
I mean,
and he was right about both of them.
I mean, the names were uncalled for, but the tinge of negativity towards their long-term viability in the NFL was correct.
Yes, absolutely. He nailed it. And I couldn't believe, I mean, standing there at who I was at that point, young guy, just getting into the business type of thing. I mean, it was one of the greatest experiences of my life.
Oh, you're welcome.
Yes, and I've said thank you many times.
Yeah, you have. Yeah, and you've made the pot straight, You know, it's all good.
So when I saw Jaworski talking about this quarterback that's in the playoffs, I just had all these flashbacks.
A quarterback in the playoffs.
And I said, man, he was right about Liner, and he was right about Vince Young. Is he right about this guy?
I'm going to give you one or two guys.
Okay, you want to guess? Go ahead.
C.J. Stroud or Jalen Hurts?
Neither.
Oh,
neither.
Okay. Sam Darnold?
No. No, no, no.
Baker Mayfield?
No.
God almighty.
Yeah.
Jaden Daniels?
No.
I mean,
at this point, Matthew I might as well just Stafford. Tell you.
No. I gotta keep going. Russell Wilson.
I mean, you're naming everybody. No.
Well, it's Lamar Jackson.
No.
Josh Allen.
No.
Okay, Patrick Mahomes.
I mean, no.
I'm missing every single player right now. That is insane. Who am I missing? Who am I missing? Who am I missing?
Quote, Ron Jaworski. I think Jordan Love is overrated.
Okay. I'm Packers, so, yep.
He is a solid QB, but he is overrated. The Eagles' offensive line will dominate up front. Was another thing he said. It had nothing to do with Jordan Love. But overrated.
Jordan Love was a late first-round draft pick. The Packers did with him what they did with Aaron Rodgers, which is a very, very smart thing to do. And, yes, I could see where he would feel that way. Okay?
But you like Jordan Love.
I do like. I like him when he came out of college, too.
You don't think he's overrated?
He signed a big contract. He hasn't played a lot of games. He took the team all the way into the playoffs last year.
Mm-hmm.
They had a chance to beat San Francisco last year, I think, right? Was it San Francisco?
Yeah, well, they beat the Cowboys, and then it was the Niners.
Right, and then the Niners went on to beat the Lions.
That's right.
So they got them deep into the playoffs last year. What I like about what the Packers have is I love their coach. I love Matt LaFleur.
Yeah, I mean, he's been great, and they... Jordan Love hopefully will play in this game and hopefully be healthy enough to make it a competitive game. As we know, Jalen Hurts is going to play, but he also lost Christian Watson for the year, which is going to be a problem. You know, in playing Jordan Love, in watching him against the Vikings, he still does scare me, but he's got a little bit of sort of that shoot from the hip in him. Like, I don't want to say,
let it rip and we're going to throw it down the field.
Yeah. So and I love that. And when he's on, he's very dangerous. But when he's off, man, it is volatile. But I don't believe that he's overrated. I think he's a very good quarterback. But it was interesting to find out he only had one 300-yard passing game all year, and that was the game in September against the Vikings when the Vikings were up 28-0 and they had to come all the way back.
He got hurt against the Eagles, I think, in Brazil, didn't he? Is that when Malik Willis came in right after that Brazil opening game?
It was the opener, and then he got hurt, and then Malik Willis came in right after that?
I think so. It was at the beginning of the year. He's probably paid like a top 10 quarterback, and he's not a top 10 quarterback. And I think that's probably some of Jaws talking there is probably, is he up? Can he live up to his contract?
Yeah, but I mean... The Packers, it's the price of doing business when you've got a quarterback and the guy took you to the... It's kind of similar to Daniel Jones, or I think Jordan Love is better than Daniel Jones. He unexpectedly took his team to the divisionals and then got a contract out of it. That's exactly what happened with Daniel Jones.
Yes.
But the next year, Jordan Love has come back and he's gotten his team back into the playoffs.
You got to remember, Jordan Love signed a four-year, $220 million contract. So that was an upper-level contract when he signed it.
Yeah.
You know, then came Dak Prescott and everybody else. Now, you know, people obviously jumping him. But, you know, I don't know. I look at his season this year. I think it was an okay season. I don't think it was the season that they expected from Jordan Love.
Yeah, he dealt with injuries for sure.
Right. He was only sacked 14 times. You know, this guy gets rid of the ball. So we always look at completion percentage. I look at completion percentage and then I look at how many times a guy is sacked. If a guy is sacked 57 times in a year, and he's completing 69% of his passes. The reason he's completing 69% of his passes is because he's taking all those sacks.
Yeah.
If Jordan Love is completing 63.5% of his passes, but he's only taking 14 sacks, that means Jordan Love is getting rid of the ball. He's not holding on to it. And, you know, he doesn't have a ton of interceptions either. I mean, he's got, like, I think 11 or something, which is okay. It's not, you know, you'd like to keep it in the single digits. But the fact of the matter is he's not killing his team by taking sacks. Like, they're, like Joe Burrow takes too many sacks.
Yeah. Well, you saw a situation with Sam Darnold, too, on Sunday night, not getting rid of the ball, you know, getting pressure in his face, played the worst game of the year. I mean, and it's, you know, Daniel Jones, one of the reasons why he finally got sat down and then released and all of that was, you know, not making that those throws. I mean, we sat there and talked about it at the time, and boom, there it is. Get rid of the ball. Get rid of the ball. Get rid of the ball. So Jordan Love does indeed at least have that, which you probably learned from Aaron Rodgers, quite frankly.
Well, the other thing, too, is that Joe Burrow led the league in attempts, you know, by far. I mean,
because their defense stunk and they were losing all the time.
That's right. So there's a lot of opportunity. There's more opportunity for sacks in that regard.
Yeah.
You know, but again, it's still like I look at those two numbers, and if you're within, say, you know, 50, 60 attempts of each other, now he's not going to be close to Joe Burrow in that regard just simply because he missed games and Joe didn't miss any games. And I don't necessarily know that Jordan Love had the amount of pressure that Joe had on him, because I think the Packer defense is reasonably decent. It's young, it's fast, and it's not a bad defense. But, you know, one of these teams that are going on the road this weekend is going to win a football game, you would think.
Yeah. I mean, it happens generally every year.
Yeah.
So I would think it would happen again. Rich is calling from Staten Island. What's going on, Rich?
Morning, guys. How are you?
Great, man. What's up?
So, Gio, you brought up the point when you kicked off the call regarding Gruden not getting an opportunity to interview and, you know, Brian Flores getting, you know, many chances to interview. And I'm not taking anything away from Brian Flores, but I just think it's really amazing that Ryan Fitzpatrick was on an interview or a podcast, you can find this online, yesterday, talking about how at the end of Miami Dolphins' 10-year coaching as Brian Flores was, he became a little bit of a dictator and unrecognizable.
Yeah, and he alienated his coaching staff and some players. We played it yesterday. Because we felt that it was important to give, you know, full context of who Brian Flores is.
Exactly. And I just find it funny that I'm not saying Brian Flores should not get an interview just based off of that, you know, podcast that, you know, Ryan Fitzpatrick did. But I'm just saying no player has ever come out about John Gruden publicly, at least, and talked about how bad of a person he is. There's an ESPN article from 2021 where, you know, talks about Gruden addressing the team in actual quotes from the players on that team in 2021, Carr, Jacobs, Denzel Perryman, all advocating for John Gruden. And I'm sure some people were upset about the emails. And Boomer, to your point, why were they made public? I mean, we all text stuff, we all email stuff that's a little, you know, colorful and maybe shouldn't be. But I really don't understand why he's not getting at least a chance to interview. I'd love to hear you guys' thoughts about that.
Yeah, and I mean, I
just captured everything we've been saying.
Right, exactly. And I explained why I think it is. I think that Roger Goodell is behind this in a big way and doesn't want the owners to bring him in. I think the owners are cowards about it. They don't want to deal with it. And they're afraid of the backlash. I think all of that is true.
I will mildly disagree with you. I'm not going to question what you feel is your feeling about other things that are going on behind the scenes. And I know that Roger Goodell was named in a couple of these emails and the way that he was characterized, and Roger Goodell's personal life was, you know, discussed openly within the media, and how that those stinging words could really insult the commissioner of the NFL. And quite frankly, he's been insulted by so many people. I you know, this is why he gets the money he gets, and the job that he has is not an easy job. And you have to deal with all sorts of nonsense. It's because it's coming at these commissioners every which way. I don't necessarily know. Is there something else behind the scenes that we don't know about? You know, I just...
Well, there was words that are attached in articles about John Gruden that the NFL doesn't want to deal with. And that's racism, homophobia, all these things that they throw at John Gruden to make it seem like he is the grand marshal of the KKK. Like, that's what every article is written about. And obviously, there's some words in there you shouldn't be using, and there's some things that were off color and bad. We know that. But for God's sakes, to completely blackball the guy for the rest of time when you see actual crimes being committed by players and then they get thrown back out on the field because they're good at what they do, why is it different with him? And also, Brian Flores, you got to remember, and I like Brian Flores. I think he deserves another opportunity to be a head coach, and I think he'll get it. But Tua came out and said flat out, quote, he's a bad guy. Said that.
Yeah, I know.
He's a bad guy. There's not a player in the NFL that has said that, has played for John Gruden, said that about him.
But if reports are accurate, back when he was the coach of the Dolphins and when they drafted Tua, remember, all the reports coming out of Miami is he wanted Justin Herbert.
Yeah.
He wanted Justin Herbert. So if you're Tua, you remember that. You know that. You read that. Your family tells you this is what your head coach, he wanted the other guy. He really didn't want you in the first place.
Sure. And that relationship was horrible. And just like I think John Gruden learned from his stuff, I think that Brian Flores learned from his as well.
You know what? Just watching what like Rob Sala has gone through the last 3.5 years, Brian Daboll has gone through the last 3 years. I mean, do you think, or don't you think, or don't you realize just how intense these situations are for these men?
Oh, yeah, of course.
I mean, the amount of friction that are... or that is around these coaches and the amount of disdain that certain players will have for these coaches. And I know for myself, I know how I felt about certain coaches that I played for. If I didn't feel like they were buttoned up, they weren't holding people accountable, they didn't have a good offensive game plan, they didn't know how to pick personnel, they didn't know how to play, you know, call plays, I totally had no respect for them. Mm. So You know that there are players and people out there that don't like somebody just simply because of the way they felt like they were treated by somebody. Let's cut this guy. We get this guy out of here. We don't want this guy here. We get him out of here. You know, that kind of stuff that happens and players react to it. So I'm sure you can find some players are going to have some negative feelings towards John Gruden, but I bet you it's 95-5. If you had 100 guys in a room, would you want to play for John Gruden?
Absolutely. Agreed.
It's the Boomer and Geo podcast from WFAN.
All right, Boomer and Geo on the Fan and CBS Sports Network. We've got CeeLo back with us. He's got another update. What's up, Chris?
All right, we're brought to you by Hard Rock Bet. Download the Hard Rock Bet app and roll with us. Also brought to you by Dr. Jay Shaw at Samwell Institute for Pain Management. Visit samwellpain.com. A lot of guys in the mix for the Knicks last night. This one, though, is for Boomer.
Out to Brunson, his three-pointer. Missed it. Tipped by Shamet. Achiuwa with the two-hand step.
We mentioned the Knicks have been out-hustling them. Again, the muscles giving them the second opportunity.
Tyler Murray and Clyde Frazier on MSG.
I love it. Hustling and muscling. Look at PA, baby.
PA.
PA, yeah. With the flush.
Man.
On the feed from Landry Shamet as the bench got involved late third quarter. The Knicks on their way to a 112-98 home win over the lowly Raptors, which featured a 15-0 run in the fourth quarter. Karl-Anthony Towns back in the lineup, 27 points, 13 rebounds. OG Anunoby, 27 points as well, as that duo led the way for Tom Thibodeau's team.
I think getting some easy baskets was key for us as well. But, you know, Cat gave us another guy, presence. OG was terrific on both ends.
Against his former team. But
his Cat's knees are okay.
Yeah, it looks like he's all right.
All right.
He seemed just fine last night, playing 34 minutes and going for 27 and 13.
Yeah, I'll tell you what.
Three
Oklahoma
steals,
City
two blocks.
Game tomorrow night at the Garden, that's going to be rocking.
Going to be lit.
What?
It's going to be lit.
Okay.
Hey, is this measuring stick litmus test?
Measuring stick.
Measuring stick spot?
I mean, you know, it's a revenge spot, really.
Well, yeah. Yeah, they failed in their measuring stick spot out there.
Yeah, but
so.
You're on the road, you know.
They played a great first half against Oklahoma City. As I told you, that article, I think it was Mike Vaccaro wrote it, and he talked about the second half against OKC, the mm-hmm. loss to Chicago, and then the loss to Orlando.
Yes.
Those were like the second half, from the second half of the OKC game to those two other games, that was the worst basketball they have played pretty much all year.
Well, get it out of your system now, right?
But the first half of OKC was the best basketball they played all year long.
Okay. Oh, it's an NBA game, right? You wait till the fourth quarter?
Right. It's an NBA game.
And see where it goes.
It really doesn't matter.
It's still the third threes, I guess.
Yeah, that happens too. Here was Anunoby doing this against his former team, but, you know, he's usually pretty understated. Wasn't really interested in that storyline.
Yeah, but it's just another game.
It's not a game. It's
your circle or don't circle that game. It's just another game.
How many times can I ask him now?
No.
Did anybody ask
Manuel, you know, Quickley and RJ Barrett?
Yeah.
They might have. I don't know. They were in there.
I saw Emmanuel Quickley just standing around out there a couple times.
He doesn't have learned. Tom Thibodeau up his butt about that
right,
now.
He hasn't learned that you got to be a little bit more aggressive.
And they're not any good, so I guess it doesn't matter much this year. They've lost 14 of 15 and their last 7 head-to-head matchups with the Knicks now. And you did mention Knicks Thunder coming up tomorrow night. And OKC will be coming in off their first loss since the NBA Cup title game December 17th. And really their first true regular season defeat since December 1st.
Garland looking. Garland now dribbles to the top of the three-point arc. Backs up, 30 to go. Garland into the paint. Floats. Automatic! DG! Into the lane! He never misses!
That's Tim Alcorn.
You gotta hope that OKC comes to New York today and tonight they go out for some fun.
Sure.
And have a good time.
Yeah.
And then come see you at the Garden tomorrow.
So watch out for that congestion pricing. I'm going to get you. Darius Garland putting his team up by 7 there, and that turned out to be the final basket of the night. A 129-122 Cavs victory over the Thunder. So Cleveland's winning streak up to 11 now. They are 32-4. OKC falls to 30-6. They're obviously still doing just fine. Shea Gilgeous-Alexander in the loss did have 31 points for OKC. Meantime, the Nets suffered another defeat last night, 113-98 against the Pistons at Barclays Center. I mentioned last hour, Detroit had that miserable season last year, 14-68, 0-4 start to this year, though they have now won 5 in a row and 8 out of 9 to get above the 500 mark for the first time, now 19-18. Head coach J.B. Bickerstaff, it's his first season with the team, so here he was comparing last year and the early stages of this year to where they are now.
You know how you feel when you lose 2 in a row or whatever it may be, and then the pressure starts to mount, right? And then the game doesn't become as much fun anymore. And this group is at its best when it's playing with a spirit of joy.
Which group is not at its best? I mean, you got to play with the spirit of joy, right?
Well, when I look at us,
some guys play well angry.
But when we come to work every day, we have such joy in our hearts.
Yeah.
Is that how you feel?
Yeah, I do.
Joy in your heart?
For the most part, I would say, yeah. There are days we come in a little angrier than others. Today was one of those days for me.
I don't have one of those days. I try not.
Come on.
Whoa, bull crap. On a stick.
Okay, come on.
For these
this
four
sucks,
hours.
That sucks, you suck, he sucks.
I mean, for these 4 hours, I mean, I totally enjoy it.
Oh, sure. After a big Ranger loss, you're in a great mood. Absolutely.
Humans are trash.
Well, we get spanked all over the Garden ice tonight because we don't know how to play defense.
Yeah. You'll come in angry tomorrow.
I will.
Exactly. Ornery.
I will.
Ornery.
So I'm just going to tell you right now, Devil fans, don't post to me. Don't. It doesn't matter. I know you have a great team.
Uh-huh. But now that you're telling them not to,
I don't even pay attention to it. It's just annoying. If you want to be annoying, fine. I'll just mute the crap out of you and just, it doesn't matter.
Rangers owe them some payback.
I think they do, but team is hamstrung with injuries now.
Heedle's out again.
Crap. God. I mean, I don't know.
He once famously said, "Shut the F up, you D-head Devil fan."
Yeah, but that wasn't on the radio show.
No, it was not. It was not. It was during Boomer and Geo Live.
Well, this
it all counts.
One of the reasons why I did it. I said, you know, you can annoy me all you want, whatever. Somehow they'll hit the screw the Ranger button tonight.
Listen.
Your goalie will stop, 27 of our 28 shots. Our goalie will have to stop 49 of
you
your 51
You
got to
stop with
shots.
That now.
What?
They don't deserve to be propped up like that, making excuses.
The
Rangers.
Oh, the Rangers, yeah. I know. I'm not trying
You're
to
better
make
than, You are, though. Screw the Ranger button.
Hey, listen,
I haven't earned any breaks right now.
I'll tell
now.
You who's hitting screw the Ranger button is Keandre Miller, late in games.
Wow.
I mean, like, to make a decision like he made the other night is just like insanity.
All right, CeeLo, what else do we have
over
there?
How about G? Yeah. I mentioned this to Al. I know you hate the hockey talk, but I need your 10 seconds thoughts.
Yeah.
Winter Classic next year, January.
Yeah.
Panthers and the Rangers from Miami. Marlins Park.
Really?
Yes. Yeah. You didn't see this?
No.
You want to go?
Somehow I missed that one.
Yesterday.
I mean, that would be one I'd want to go to.
Now, so that place must be, it's a water retractable roof, so it's
yes.
They can climate control that. However, in February, they're doing a Stadium Series game, Lightning against the Bruins at Raymond James Stadium in Tampa. Which is not climate control.
They're really pushing.
You got 2 outdoor games next year in Florida.
I'm sure the players are going
to
love that.
Great to go to an outdoor game in a short sleeve t-shirt.
I guess, but what do they do for the ice? And I guess I should say the Marlins Park game wouldn't be outdoors. It would be
right. They're,
but isn't that the whole point of the Winter Classic? It's supposed to be outside. No,
mm-hmm. It's supposed to be cold.
Yeah
cold and yes. Remind everybody
right, well,
on hockey. Well, That's they've gotten away from
some
that.
Some kind of magic trick I guess they're going to pull off. All right, football now. A little recap of Wednesday for the Jets. They completed interviews with Chiefs offensive coordinator Matt Nagy and Chiefs assistant GM Mike Borgonzi, who I know you're a big
Borgonzi,
fan of.
Borgonzi, bro.
Eagles.
I mean, find me that pick. If you go through all of Borgonzi's pick, find me the guy that's still a starter, bro. Find me that guy. Fire Borgonzi. Fire him, bro. Get him out of here.
Patrick Mahomes.
And then Eagles assistant GM Alec, I don't know, Halabi. This Eagles assistant GM, I don't even know how to say his name. And you got two new names added to this very long list of candidates or interview requests. Chiefs defensive coordinator Steve Spagnuolo and Lions special assistant Chris Spielman. Today they've got the virtual interview with Aaron Glenn. And between the known head coach and GM candidates on their list, you're looking now at no fewer than 28 names.
Exactly. Here and say they're not doing their due diligence.
They certainly are doing their due diligence.
And I wonder if there are any second interviews coming.
I would think at some point there probably would be, no?
Right. So you got Mike Vrabel meeting with the Patriots today.
Yeah.
And do we have an agreement in principle?
Hope so.
Comment.
Get this thing moving along.
Did he do the Bears interview already?
Yes.
Okay. There you go. Very good. All right, Gio, I know you're Aaron Rodgers doubt. I get it. So this is just one story from one guy, but maybe we counter some of the narrative out there about Aaron. Maybe he's a bad teammate, bad guy. I mean, that exists. We would agree, right? To some extent. We've heard that.
Yes.
We've kind of...
I feel like the Jets players actually like him, but go ahead.
So maybe some do, some don't. But okay. I present Jermaine Johnson, who, like Rodgers, of course, blew out his Achilles early in the season. So he was organizing his travel out to California to get it repaired and considering all options, including a private flight.
I was like, well, Aaron's got a jet. Let me just ask him, you know, save some money, I'll use his jet, I'll pay you the everything, however it goes. And you save more money, obviously, using a French jet than one of these charter jets.
Sure.
So ultimately, he decides to go through with that. And again, as you mentioned, with the intention of covering whatever the cost is.
I was like, yeah, I'll put it together. Cool. I'm getting ready. I'm getting on the flight. I'm like, hey, by the way, you never sent me, you know, the wire information to pay these flights. Keep in mind, these flights from coast to coast are like at least $30,000. No, at least $30,000.
So a lot of money, even for a pro athlete. Last one here, Johnson insistent on paying his way out west on this private jet, but Rodgers was not having it.
Aaron basically goes, don't worry about it. And I'm getting mad because I'm like, no, you know, I don't like people doing things for me. You know what I mean? He's like, don't worry about it. You're a great guy. You handle everything for everybody in your life. Now's the time period you have to focus on receiving help and letting that happen. He's like, let me do this for you.
There you
amazing.
Go.
There you go.
Good
that's
deal.
Right.
Aaron's a teammate. Very nice.
Kind of Walter Payton, man of the year. Let's just hand it over to him.
All right, see what kind of jet he has.
Yeah, I'm curious. I would love to know. Did he say in there what he has?
Not in the portion of the clip that was out there.
I mean, and I would say more than 30,000. I'm assuming, if it's on, big enough, which it should be, to go to California and back.
Yeah.
Without having to stop halfway through, it's got to be
bigger plane.
Yeah, it's got to be like a Citation 10. Maybe it's a maybe it's a Challenger. I'm trying to think what kind of plane do I think Aaron Rodgers would have.
It's the Boomer and Geo podcast from WFAN.
All right, Boomer and Geo on the Fan and CBS Sports Network. So ESPN debuted two new programs over the last week or so. And I want to get your opinion on which one did better in the ratings that are out. All right. Two very different things.
Okay.
One is they call it Late Night with Jason Kelce. So apparently everything Kelce comes up amazing, right? Kylie Kelce's podcast was more popular than Joe Rogan's, apparently. You know, and then you got the the Brothers podcast is called. I even forgot about that, whatever the name of it is. Everything Kelce comes up big. So you got that debuted, first episode. And then the first, I guess you call it, episode or debut of TGL, which is Tomorrow's Golf League that Rory and Tiger Woods put together. It's at a SoFi Center down in Florida. It is basically simulator golf that they also play indoors where there's a real bunker and real greens and you hit off a real grass and they have teams and Xander Schauffele's on teams, Ludwig Åberg, big names, and Tiger and Rory were there. So both of these things debuted. One of them did way better than the other.
All right.
Well, they're on at different times. The other thing, too, is I have a guy that works for me, Chris. You know, you've met Chris.
Okay.
And Chris was telling me about this TGL. And I've been doing reads for TGL at SoFi. And, you know, on ESPN, the whole thing. So I do know about what that is. I have to say that TGL blew the Kelce show out of the water. That's what I would guess.
Yes, and you guess right. It averaged, if you're just doing averaged, TGL 1.2 million viewers, where the Jason Kelce first episode did 290,000.
And what time does Jason go on?
I
feel like Jason is a national personality for sure, no question about that. But I also feel like he's an East Coast guy.
Yeah.
And if you're putting him on at 11 o'clock or whatever time you're putting him on ESPN, you're going to be losing a lot of East Coast viewers. You know, like if you put, and I don't know where you would put it to get more viewers. I'm not sure. But, you know, I didn't see it. I didn't hear much promotion about it. Did you?
Yeah. I mean, everything. I saw a lot of articles around it. I feel like everybody likes to write about the Kelces because there is some sort of engagement there with them. But I didn't hear a ton about it, but I definitely heard about
it. Now, if one of the Kelce kids comes up with a cartoon show, that's enough.
Then it's too much.
That's too much.
Yeah. So TGL's opening night reached over 3.2 million unique viewers and averaged 1.2 million viewers for the entire broadcast. So,
like I told you, the guy that works for me, Chris, he was really excited about this and was telling me all about the team's concept and everything. And he couldn't wait to get home and watch it.
Yeah, so I ended up watching it yesterday. I didn't stay up for it live the other night. And it's interesting. It's fun. They've got everybody mic'd up. I mean, you know all the stuff that I mean, this is perfect for me because I sit around and watch YouTube golf all the time. But I was actually surprised that it did the numbers that it did. And I'm glad that it did because I think that's great. But I was a little bit surprised. So we'll see if they keep it up. You know, we'll see the debut. People are interested. We'll see if they liked it enough to come back. It's sort of like the Fakakta football. The first week of Fakakta football is generally good, and then it sort of goes down
right.
The tubes after that. But there will be, you know, Rory and Tiger are going to be heavily involved. They were heavily involved in the debut episode. So we'll see if it keeps up. But that's impressive.
I still think that, you know, again, they have to continue to promote it. They got to know where to promote it. I think we've been promoting it here for at least 6 weeks.
Yeah, not with live reads, but.
Well, I do it in the sports read, going into
Sports
Minutes, right, yes. Right. So I know that they're promoting it that way, and which is smart, and I would continue to do that. But that's not surprising, especially with the sponsorship packages they have and the way that those simulators look. And for all of us who are golfers that do actually go hit in simulators, it's actually an amazing look to it.
Oh, well, it's the best one ever. They spent a lot of money on that. It's the greatest one ever, and they're using real grass that you hit off of and real rough. It's pretty impressive. Let's go to Chris, who's down in Orlando. What's going on, Chris?
Gio, big fan of yours, Boomer as well. But Boomer, I got a question for you. I don't know if you ever received Sean Moore's text, but Evan asked him to text you yesterday during the Cinco de Fivo. I don't give this list much credibility because they were doing the top five number fives in New York history, and they left out Dennis Poffin. I mean, come on, give me a break.
Wow, that's a bad job on their part. That's just
overseas. Well, it was Sean.
Yeah.
Sean, let's be clear. But Sean, so I don't give it much credibility when you leave out one of the best number fives in New York, but he tried to say that Dan Girardi was a better number five than David Wright. Now, look, I know you're a Ranger and a Mets fan, and you'll call it down the middle. You actually believe, well, knowing now you know Poffin was left off the list, can you really give credibility to Sean that he thinks Dan Girardi had a better New York career than David Wright? And you're a Ranger and a Mets fan. I'd like to know if you ever heard what happened yesterday.
They're very similar in their careers for the sports in which they play. And I would say that both guys were great. I know that David Wright, for Met fans, is like one of the faces of the franchise. You don't feel that way about Dan Girardi. But Dan Girardi, when he was playing here and he was young and he was really playing well, he was a great player for us. So I can't believe that left this spot.
Well, I mean, listen, we not to pull back the curtain here, but let's get real. You know, Sean loves trolling the fan bases that he is not a fan of.
Yeah, I know.
And it's no surprise that he left off the most famous, one of the most famous Islanders to ever live, and the one that gets under the Rangers' skin the most, and David Wright.
You know, is Dua Lipa overrated?
See, that's what he does.
Yeah, okay.
See?
So,
he knows.
All right, so again, just I don't want to get into a sports talk argument over this, but, you know, I will say this, that, you know, even though I am a dyed-in-the-wool Ranger fan, always have been, always will be, never have been an Islander fan, obviously love my son-in-law, want him to do well. But I will say that, you know, when you think about the greatest hockey teams in the history of the league,
I'm a fat moron.
Okay. one of those Stanley Cup winning teams has got to be right up there at, you know, one, two, or three. You know what I mean?
Love to hear that. Yes, I do.